Okay, we call the meeting back to order at 6:53. Okay, next item on the agenda is written communications. Do we have any? We do.
We do. We received an email dated March 10th from Sheila Dwyer in response to, or to Bill Beck regarding the passenger rail services. An email dated March 12th from Sandy Miller regarding kudos to the Blaine Police Department. An email dated March 16th from the Washington State Department of Financial Institutions regarding volunteering to read to elementary students. And Katrina Roy called me today. Her name is the contact in that email. And she asked that if any council member is interested to please contact her through that email address. Then we received an email dated March 16th from Woodring College regarding leadership benefit brunch to support Washington's mentoring program. And an email dated March 17th from Bill Beck to Congressman Larson regarding Amtrak stop in Blaine.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is the consent agenda. We have approval of bills in the amount of $337,656.44, approval of the council minutes for March the 9th, 2015, approval of the study session minutes for March the 16th, 2015, and approval of an interlocal cooperation agreement with Whatcom County Sheriff's Office Special Weapons and Tactics Team. I'll look for a motion.
So moved. Second.
Motion has been made and second. Are there any questions or comments regarding the consent agenda? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Next item on the agenda is the council action items. The first one is a bid award for the groundkeeper's contract. And Raven, I understand that you're going to make some comments regarding that.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Unfortunately, my recommendation is actually a bid rejection. The bids were opened last week as per the documents, and after seeing an $80,000 spread between the two bids, we looked into it a little deeper. We met with a low bidder and discovered that there was, in fact, a significant error on their part. In light of this and also our conversations with both of the bidders, our thought was to reject all and rebid the contract this week, hopefully making things more clear for the bidders, incorporating the different addenda that went out, and having a better result. We actually have a rare instance where there's an extra week in between council meetings, so by getting that out this week, which we will, we'll be coming to you at your very next meeting in April for a bid award. And I was planning on talking a little to my strategy during my update, but I'll just cover a little bit now just to let you know that we decided to break the bid into East Blaine and Central Blaine, pulling the cemetery and the SR 543 work separate. Kind of different. A little bit of a different animal and different skills, and I think that it'll suit the different bidders a little bit better to look at that differently. So everything else, we've relatively kept the same, incorporated some of the input, like I said, and we're feeling very hopeful that it'll be a successful bid.
Any questions or comments?
I move we reject the bid.
Second.
Okay. The staff has recommended the City Council reject all bids to allow for reevaluation of project scope. Motion has been made and seconded. Are there any questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Next item on the agenda is approval of appointees to the Public Works Advisory Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Very excited to bring to you a recommendation from our city manager to have these four individuals serve on the committee. We actually received five volunteers that were interested, and one of those was not able to meet at the same time of day that everyone else was able to meet. And so we actually interested him in representing Blaine on the Whatcom COG Citizen Technical Advisory Group. So that's worked out well for everybody. And so we have recommendations for both the one-year term and the two-year term, and we made those recommendations based on some of the information in those applications. And we're looking forward to your approving these recommendations so that we can get started.
Okay. Staff recommends the council approve the recommendations of the city manager and appoint John Graff, Charles Harrell, Bruce Pryor, and Eric Davidson to the Public Works Advisory Committee.
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Any questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0.
Thank you.
Next item on the council action items is the approval of the interlocal contract for cooperative purchasing with the HGAC BY.
Good evening, council. So this is to approve an interlocal contract with a national purchasing cooperative, which is called the Houston-Galveston Area Council. And essentially what purchasing cooperatives do is they provide the benefit of expedited procurement, in that they conduct the competitive bidding process, so it basically saves the members that step in the purchasing process. So economies of scale are achieved through this type of cooperative. Another benefit is that the city would see volume pricing discounts in the items that would be purchased off of the cooperative contracts. So some items that could be purchased would be vehicles, machinery and equipment, tractors, etc., furniture, any type of contract that's part of the cooperative, we could buy off of that. And so, like I said, it saves time, staff time, and resources in that bidding process. It's already been taken care of. It's been completed by the purchasing cooperative. And so the cooperative does not charge membership fee, so that there's a savings in that regard, and that fee is passed on to the contractor that would belong to the cooperative.
That's good to me. Staff recommends the council approve the interlocal contract for cooperative purchasing with the Houston-Galveston Area Council. To entertain a motion, if anyone cares to make. Motion has been made and seconded. Are there any questions or comments? Jeff. Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0.
Thank you.
Next item on the agenda is the resolution 1662-15, the 7th Street Community Garden Policy and Rules.
Thank you, Council. The For a period of time, for several years now, there's been a community garden on 7th Street. Initially, that started out with some citizens who wanted to get together and create that garden. And basically, a contract was put in place between a garden manager and the city to run the community garden. And over the years, things have evolved, and that manager changed to a different manager. And then Maxine, and I wish I could remember her last name, who was here for many years, ultimately moved out of town, but still was the garden manager for a while, and it has transitioned again, and there's a gentleman named Charles Kelm, who's the garden manager and has been for a couple of years. And Charles is doing a great job, but nonetheless, it's kind of come to our attention that we need to establish a more formal set of rules. And when the gardeners developed their program, and as they evolved over time, they started collecting a fee.
for plots, and that money was used to do things like buy tools and things that were stored in a community shed. And we have no indication that there was any misappropriation of funds or anything like that. But as a result of the fact that there are funds collected for use of the city's property, we're including in these rules the idea that those funds would now be collected and managed by the city, and there would be money for things like tools and such for the garden. But for the most part, this is being done just to kind of clarify what the rules are and establishing a program for dispersing plots each year. The Parks and Cemetery Board held three public meetings where they allowed people opportunities to provide testimony, and they put a lot of thought into implementing these programs. There's a great deal of interest on the part of some of the gardeners to use the same plots over and over again each year, because they put a lot of time and energy into improving the soil where they garden. And there's been a transition over the past few years to not plow the whole garden all at once, but to individually rototill the different plots. That has the tendency to not spread around people's weeds and not spread around all that hard-earned garden soil that some people have developed. And so some things like that have changed. So we've developed this rule set. Park and Cemetery Board is very supportive of it, and we would request that council implement or the rules by adoption of Resolution 1662-15.
Any questions?
Yeah.
Good.
Michael, the item on no synthetic fertilizer. How does the plant recognize the difference?
I don't think the plants do. I think that the gardeners do, and they have a preference for organic fertilizers.
If I understand this, then there will be no commercial fertilizers allowed in that area.
That would be correct, unless you consider bags of manure when you buy them to be commercial fertilizer.
But the problem I have with it is that the people that are wanting to garden in there, they don't necessarily all of them want to do that way.
And I
guess my problem is that the city is then saying, well, these people are not allowed in here because of some rule the city has established that prevents them from making use of those plots, which are, I felt, should be available to everyone.
That's reasonable. The Park and Cemetery Board did, like I said, take input for over the course of three different meetings. They've asked the gardeners to participate. Notices were put up there. And it's not precluding someone from participating. It's just saying if you participate, these are the rules. So if someone wanted to garden, they would, and they usually used Miracle-Gro in their garden, they would need to change their practice if they were gardening there.
I guess my question then is that, is the city going to provide an alternative site for those people that are not wanting to follow that particular procedure?
There's been some discussion of the need for probably creating another site in the probably near future, within the next few years, but it wasn't put in the perspective of an alternative site. That would be one which would allow chemical fertilizers.
So this would be considered an organic community garden?
Organic has a lot of rules and regulations that carry along with it.
I don't mean certified.
Yeah. So
I don't mean certified.
I don't either.
Essentially, if you don't allow synthetic fertilizer pesticides, it's essentially an organic garden. So, you know,
that's how I
see why
look at
we couldn't call it that, to make people aware that if you're going to garden there, you're expected to garden organically. And then if we do decide to set up another one that's non-organic, we could do that at some point. Otherwise, I'm kind of in agreement with Dennis that it's, I mean, unless you think that the predominance of opinion by the gardeners is that they want an organic garden all the way around, not just their plot, but everybody else to use organic fertilizers, then it's kind of restrictive.
That's definitely been my perception from the testimony that I've heard and the people who have talked to me, is the predominance is for not using chemical pesticides and fertilizers. And honestly, I haven't had anyone come to me and say, I want to spray my garden with Roundup between the rows, or I want to be able to use Miracle-Gro. Yeah. No one's come and said that to me. Others have said, we'd like that not to be here. So the general consensus seems to be that, although I personally have not surveyed every single gardener and said exactly what do you not want to use or use. Main thing is the gardeners were asked to provide input, and others were asked to provide input, and this is the rule set that the Park and Cemetery Board is recommending adoption.
I have one more question.
Yes, go ahead.
Are they allowed to build raised beds? Or do they have to get approval for building any kind of structure from the city?
They would need to get approval. There isn't a specific rule related to that. At this point, there is a proposal that's been brought forward by the garden manager who, in conjunction with Alex, who's been managing this, has applied for a small grant from Whatcom State University Agricultural, the outreach program, put in raised beds. I believe it's four on one garden plot, so they'd be like mini plots that they're then considering possibly making available to people with disabilities or seniors who aren't able to really get around in the bigger garden plot. So at this point, it's kind of like a pilot project, but we've never made the investment of installing raised beds. I would be the garden manager the way this is written, and my perspective on that would be that if we're going to do raised beds, we should do it in an organized fashion and then probably implement a program rather than, you had said, are people allowed to build raised beds? Well, I would say probably no, because then next year if they don't come and garden on that plot has raised beds that may have been built poorly or that someone else may not want to use. And so I think we would want to do it in an organized way.
And if the group wanted to build a little greenhouse, what about something like that? Would that
as the garden manager, I'd need to step in and make a decision on whether that seemed appropriate or not. Potentially, it could be, but I don't know.
But in other words, they can't do that sort of thing, just do it on their own. They
right.
have to get approval for that sort of thing.
You know, generally, those kinds of things are temporary, because the gardens are, in the fall, fertilized or rototilled under all the material is pulverized and kind of sit dormant over the wintertime, and then they're reallocated in the springtime. So the gardens that I've seen operate oftentimes don't have those, but if they did, they were removed at the end of the season.
Yeah.
Both garden beds as well as any other structure, fences and poles and climbing trees and all those kind of things.
Yeah, it seems like we're trying to micromanage something that shouldn't be so micromanaged to me, a building that's having a garden space. It seems like we should be able to
I'm just kind of, I don't know. What's wrong with Miracle-Gro?
So what? They can take them down.
Harry?
Yes.
Michael, if you go out there right now, it's ugly. I mean, things have been left from last year. There's chairs and just all kinds of things. I would think that city should require that those be cleaned up at the end of the season, like you say. And if anything's possible, plant some kind of cover crop so that you're not going to... There's ponds of water out there now. And you could pretty well eliminate them if you had cover crops.
So what I would suggest to council is that if you're not comfortable with implementing these rules, just to remand this to the Park and Cemetery Board for further consideration and some direction on what you'd like to see. I don't want to write the garden rules here and now. I'm a gardener, and I have a lot of my own opinions, and I could express those to you and tell you what they should do and what they're doing wrong and why a lot of things need to happen there. But they're also doing a lot of things right. They're also making very minimal investments, and it is on city property. So, like, I would do a whole bunch of things to change the situation there if it were my own property, but it's not, and therefore, if I were a gardener, I wouldn't invest all of that in it. Some of them have put in significant investments in the soil, so I don't think we should make the rules here and now. If you don't like these, send it back to the Park and Cemetery Board. But again, I would say Park and Cemetery Board had three meetings on this, welcome testimony. This is what the consensus of the gardeners is.
Michael, can you help me? I'm trying to figure out, there's a community development director, and that is...
That's me.
That's you. There is a community garden manager.
Yes.
As community development director, do you appoint the community garden manager?
It's been a de facto thing in the past, and but yes, I recognized, I would say, and Charles Kelm as the garden manager when he took over for Maxine.
And he reports to you?
Yes, in a very informal way as a volunteer. Yeah.
But I think that should be in the garden policy and rules, that you have the community development director has the right to appoint a community garden manager. And that should probably be a yearly position. You didn't like the community garden manager, you could reappoint a new one. Does that make sense?
It does. It's not formalized on how that happens. No. It's the volunteer who comes forward, and it's kind of a cooperative thing. But it does make sense. Otherwise,
you wonder
who that is.
But if somebody comes up to you and says, hey, what's this guy doing?
Right.
You know, why did he get to be the garden manager? You could say, well, I appointed him. I'm the community.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense. Otherwise, someone would say, well, how come he's the manager? Because he says so.
Can we approve this agreement with that?
Yeah, we would just add that as rule number 10.
Okay. So Michael, could I have one more question with you?
Sure.
To sign up for the spots out there, and I assume they're all the same size.
More or less.
It says that the people that have been gardening, they can do that on the 1st of February?
Yeah, returning gardeners get a 1 month in advance so that they have an opportunity to reserve their plots a second time, a third time, a fourth time. In some instances, people have been there for years.
Is there any problem with them that being a system that's operating so that the only way you get a new plot, if somebody passes away, that one becomes available?
So I think that would be the case if what was happening was we had people coming to us and saying, we want to get into the community garden, but there are no spots. 2 to 3 years ago, I went and gardened, and I paid my $12 to be a community gardener over there. I went, and I worked at one of the garden plots, and I planted stuff, and it was a horrible spot because I had a terrible problem with weeds because no one had gardened in that plot for the year before, and from what I understand, the year before that. And there were three or four plots that sat fallow next to me that no one ever gardened in the entire time. And so my experience was that there's not a full demand. And for a number of years, people have been allowed to have more than one plot, sometimes even three plots, because no one else wanted them. So, you know, right now we seem to have a little bit of like a critical mass where we're sort of at capacity or very near capacity. So that might be changing, but it hasn't been the case up until now. People have not been excluded, to the best of my knowledge. And people have been using extra plots just so they didn't sit fallow. And that's why there's a provision in here for people to reserve a second plot. But if somebody comes in and wants it, they don't get to have two. But it does give preference to gardeners who have been there in the past. There's no way around that in these rules. It gives them an opportunity.
Well, curiosity, how big are these plots?
They're about 10 by 22, 12 by 20, 12 by 20. And they do vary a little bit, but they're about that big.
I think they're a good set of guidelines, and they're definitely needed up there from what I see and from what I hear from people. So maybe they're not perfect, but it's definitely a step in the right direction. I think we should approve it.
Mm-hmm. Will that change?
We'll revise that. I think what we'll actually do is incorporate it into that little paragraph below, the appointing. And then I made a note that we'll make more of a concerted effort to work on some sort of a fall cleanup, although you shouldn't expect to see it plowed under in the fall because many people have overwintering crops like Brussels sprouts and kale and things like that stay. But I agree, the plastic chair that's sitting out there ought not to sit out there all winter.
Well, I think it's not good for the guy that lives next door.
I think it's up to the community development director to make sure the chairs are taken care of.
I was thinking that too.
Through the manager, though. You've got to give them a little bit of authority to keep on top of people.
We'll give them a place to put the chairs, and then they can move on.
Is there any chance that the drainage could be improved for the plot?
I would defer that to our public works
Raven,
crew. Yeah, to maybe take a look at that at some point. The soil there is terrible. It's ironic that it's the community garden. It's awful clay, and there's really no slope. It doesn't drain anywhere. We can look at that. I think the best long-term solution is to put in raised beds, to be honest with you, but that will require a funding source.
I sympathize with where I have heard Dennis is going on synthetic fertilizers versus organic, but I also sympathize with what Stephen is saying. Let's approve something tonight.
That's
so
sure.
I lend my support to Stephen. Let's approve it tonight. And should the synthetic fertilizer debate continue over next year, well, we'll readdress it. Maybe the Parks and Cemetery Board can readdress it.
I think the fact that we're going to be known as the organic city is very beneficial. We're green and organic, so that could work in our favor. Okay, anybody else? Does anybody want to take this back to the Parks and Cemetery Board and have them revise it?
No, just add that.
Okay. Can we get a motion to that effect?
Second.
Okay. Any questions or comments further? Hearing none, we'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Next item is the approval of a third-party architectural design review.
Yes, this is also me. In Title 1706A, where we have a code section related to design review, there's been for years, more than a decade, I think something like 12 years or so, there's been a stipulation for a third-party architectural design review to assist with design review of downtown development and then implementation of residential design standards. Because we've not had circumstances that required it, we've not done this on an annual basis, but if you were to read it, you would think we did it every year we appointed this architect. In this instance, we have someone who's proposed something that we think ought to go through the design review, so we're proposing that we implement this code, or that we exercise this code section and appoint a licensed architect selected by the city council, so that's why I'm here, for a one-year term to be the review specialist. We're proposing Dave Christensen. We interviewed three different architects. Mr. Christensen is a fine gentleman. He was not our first choice because the other party had a conflict of interest. He bowed out. And I would note that in our contract, we've written something where that if the architect develops a conflict of interest, they can bow out of the contract. It's actually been a challenge with some of these gentlemen that we've talked to is, well, am I supposed to not take any jobs in Blaine? And if the answer to that question were yes, you can't take any jobs in Blaine, pretty much guarantee you they weren't going to do 2 hours of work for us and keep away from a $10,000 contract. So this would have a kind of a bow out option, and we might do this again. Although, like I said, we've had this in our code for years and have only this one time, as far as I know, had to exercise it. So staff requests that council select Christensen Design Management, specifically Dave Christensen, to be the third-party design review architect.
Further questions or comments?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Paul.
Design review architect.
Somehow I knew that was coming. When a project comes through and it doesn't clearly comply with our downtown design standards, or our single-family residential design standards where those apply, which is in the SF1 zoning district and the SF2 zoning district. A third-party architect who does a design review and reports to me their opinion. And so we have one of those proposals now where someone's proposing a single-family home that is doesn't meet one of our standards. I'm not quite sure if it does or how it does, and rather than not follow the law, we're going to follow the law and get a design review rather than staff just saying, I don't think that really works. Or saying, you know, I see how you're stretching it or how you're interpreting it this way, but it does work. That's what the whole point of the third-party design of the architect. I would say that if we adopt the new downtown design standards that we're proposing and have become delayed for legal reasons, we've eliminated that position, so we wouldn't be hiring that person to review every downtown structure.
So this person will review structures only as needed?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
In reviewing, when he's reviewing someone's drawings and finds that they don't really comply, does he at the same time offer suggestions of how they could comply?
Well, he would provide a report to me, and we would assume that would include some suggestions potentially.
And then you could relay that onto the person.
Yeah, or at least would stipulate specifically why it doesn't comply, which someone could then address. And yeah, we would provide that feedback to them. And just to be clear, this is not a really, for a large commercial structure, it could be somewhat of a big review. For a single family home, this is probably an hour or two of work to look at the design. And we're not even talking about reviewing the plans, like the building official reviews the plans. This is just reviewing the design of the structure. Does it meet the roof pitch? Does it meet the trim standards? Does it meet some of the other things? Mm-hmm. It's really pretty basic.
Other questions?
It's not really part of the final decision. That's yours, though.
That's right. It's a report to me.
Okay, staff recommends council select Christensen Design Management, LLC, to conduct third-party architectural design review.
Also move.
Second.
Moved and second. Any other comments or questions? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries 7-0. Next item on our agenda is the commission committee and board reports. Blaine Economic Development Advisory Committee, Mr. Wilbrecht.
We had a meeting last week. It was a short meeting in the sense of topic items. It was a long meeting in the sense we had a presentation by a company called Buxton, who is a interesting group of folks. We actually had another hour phone call with them today. What they do is aggregate and study data, retail data. So I'll try to take a couple minutes to explain it, and then we can come back into it with a larger presentation. They've got the capacity to acquire, I'll say, millions of data points on purchasing from hundreds and hundreds of retailers across the country, as well as those who live locally. And what they do with all those data points is start to create the picture of what your local community is purchasing. So they can go into a city, they can go into a community, they can go into a type of business. They can look at, say, 50 restaurant types. And a restaurant type would be Burger King and McDonald's, or it could be a higher-end family style. But they can go into those places and learn who their customers are, where they live, how much they spent, do they have children or not, do they go to the movies. So they start to generate information about who the consumers are in and around the city, and then those who come to the city. We're unique, of course, because of the border. And where we typically would have, they called it 71 data sets. So a data set could be a chain of restaurants or types of restaurants. So 71 different types that have, several hundred specifics within that they can study. So you're talking mass amounts of data. Canada has about 10 of those points. So it's not just the number of 10. It's 10 times 50 or 10 times 500, depending upon what that particular market is. And for them, it's anywhere retail is anywhere cash is exchanged. Cash being a credit card or, some transaction. So hobby stores, grocery stores, anything you can name where you can buy and sell things as part of their data set. So the presentation on Tuesday afternoon was to try to familiarize the group with what the concept of is about. If we had someone like doing that work for us, how would it help us move forward with a retail strategy? And I think the answer is still yet to be fully defined, but the idea would be to hire a company that would study Blaine. The folks that come in to pick up packages every day Are they buying anything else here? Can we capture that data? If we had other things to buy here, would they stay and buy here? So it's a very complex and expensive proposition. It's a multi-year project. The idea would be to, I think the city would need to do a study to understand what it is where, what our market looks like, and then be very specific about which projects and which kinds of retail we wanted. So let's say, for example, that the most of the people in Blaine, when they go to Bellingham, go to Thai restaurants, for example, or to barbecue or whatever they're buying. Is enough, are enough of those going to Bellingham for a company to come and put a business here? Maybe not. On the other hand, coffee. You know, Starbucks has always been a popular conversation. If we had a Starbucks here, what would be the possibilities of us being successful? Well, they would look at Edeline, for example, because there's always already history there. They would go to those Starbucks that are already in place in the region and study who goes there from here. So that's the kind of information that the group would have to start looking at. Then be very specific and targeted about going after developers who would develop a building, and then those potential users, the retailers in those buildings. So it's not a one-stop shop. All it does is set the structure up for us to be very specific and targeted in the approach for retail. So I thought it was a good presentation. I think there's a lot more to learn about it. We're going to study, at least have a couple more presentations from other groups the next meeting. Then probably the following meeting we'll have more time to discuss it. And as we get smarter about how we want to approach this, I think we're probably going to, I'm going to probably ask some, maybe some local developers to come to the meeting, people who have interacted with retail, so maybe some developers if they have time or interest out of Bellingham. We have folks that have been very successful here that could help us. So that's kind of just a synopsis of the report. I think it's a good start, and it's a great group. The other thing that came out of that, I want to thank Michael for this, is we're going to start a regular update to the newspaper about what we're doing. I think be more proactive with reporting out what we're trying to get accomplished is better than being responsive to comments and letters. So I think that's another action we're going to take. So good group. Appreciate the support. Take any questions and comments.
Paul.
Well, the council approved $65,000, $20,000 from the economic development from the port, and we added back onto that some more money from the Red Fund. But we're not spending that money right now. We're just looking to see how best to use that. I don't have any plans to do anything nearby, near soon or tomorrow. We have to figure out what we want to do. Well, I think they have a range, of course, depending on what size of the city. You know, I think a common number is $50,000. 50. So we have other cities that we can do, have some conversations with. Caribou, Maine is very similar to Blaine in size and proximity to the border. It's a different surrounding area. It doesn't have a Vancouver. The city of Port Angeles in Washington is one of their clients, so we're going to talk to them as well. So we'll call several of their clients and find out what they're doing, what their scope of services is, and what their costs are. We get a better sense of where we're going with it. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, David. Okay, Steve, you've got two clubs, two organizations there.
No meetings for the tourism, not till next month. And Boys and Girls Club, we've already talked about.
Okay, Blaine Chamber of Commerce, Blaine.
No report.
WTA, Paul.
A call for a volunteer. The WTA will be engaging in a strategic review starting essentially now. One of the persons that strategic review will be a committee of citizens and elected officials throughout your service area to help guide the development of the strategic review. If there's somebody in Blaine that would like to be on that committee, there's certainly room for them. I would suggest somebody not an elected official because I'm already involved in it through my own work with WTA. But somebody on the public works, somebody who has volunteered for some other committee and not been selected, but somebody who has a particular interest in transport issues, any of those people would be welcome.
Thanks, Paul. Drayton Harbor Shellfish Advisory Committee, Charlie.
No report for Drayton Harbor shellfish, but the Wings Over Water went great. The plover was full, even though it was crummy out in the morning. But everybody had a good time.
Okay, Dennis, the library and senior center.
You heard from the library. They just want one. The senior center's got a couple of things coming on. One is a rummage sale, which is a fundraiser for them. And so I understand if you've got some goodies that could be put into that sale, that would be acceptable. And then in May, they have the high tea. I don't have the specific dates on those for you right now.
Okay.
Question?
Yes, Mitch.
Dennis, for rummage, are they looking at material items like furniture or clothing?
I'm not sure. Okay. I think they would, if you were willing to talk to them, and they make a maybe decide based on that.
They seem to have a wide assortment. Yeah. Various items. So.
Have you met Dana Hanks?
Yeah. Yes, I have.
Oh, okay.
Give her a call. Planning Commission, Mr. Jones.
No report for the Planning Commission and no report for the Park and Cemetery Board. Sir.
Small Cities Caucus, we're still involved with the jail. And, we have a meeting tomorrow and one on Thursday, so. Nothing really to report on that other than we're in heavy negotiations with all the various small cities, and seeing what we can do to figure out how we're going to finance the jail. Finance Committee, we have a meeting on Wednesday, which we're going to see a report on.
We're going to actually watch a webinar on reaching financial resiliency. This can say 11 o'clock.
11 o'clock.
Yeah.
Here.
It's actually at the Public Works Conference Room.
Public Works Conference Room.
What time again?
11 o'clock.
11 o'clock. And everybody's welcome on the council?
Well, it would be a public meeting if we had more than three.
Okay.
Not if they don't have any actions. Can't they just get together and watch it? Yeah. Like attending
it.
It's like attending a. Well, it's going to be
up. So anyway, if anybody wants to go, get hold of Sherry and decide.
Yes.
I'm going to be there. Okay. And the Whatcom Council of Governments, no report. And the North Whatcom Fire update. And do we have one of our...
Evening Council?
Oh. Let's sit here. Yeah.
Sharing with you our monthly... Chief's report with all of our statistics. Just pointing out a couple of things this month. You can see we're already at 539 calls. That's through the end of February. And for those of you that are interested in our response to Semiahmoo, it's we had 7 in February, and our response time was down a couple minutes. So under 10 minutes getting out to Semiahmoo. And then one last item as far as the Semiahmoo Marina goes. We've made great progress on their standpipe system, and their standpipe system, I'll explain it to you. It's like little fire hydrants out on the docks in case there's a boat fire. Well, Semiahmoo didn't have working ones for quite a few years out there. So we've been working with them since last January. They're going to have their system pressure tested tomorrow. So for all intents and purposes, they have 18 fire hydrants out on working fire hydrants out on the docks. So we're making good progress. They've got all new fire extinguishers and some new mounting boxes and then some more minor painting and signage things to get done, and then they'll all be up to snuff on their fire code. So, moving along well there. And with that, unless you have any other questions.
Questions for the Chief. Thank you very much, Chief. Department reports is the next item on the agenda, Public Works.
All right, on my project update this evening, I wanted to let you know that we were also in receipt of an email regarding the mailboxes and various neighborhoods that have been moved by the post office. And Bill Bullock has been working with the postmaster, and we got a written commitment today that he will have his maintenance team move them back. My understanding is Bill's trying to set up a meeting with them, because there are other options to moving them back, like widening the sidewalk behind and providing a rear access. As we understand it, the union with the postal workers has different rates if they get out of their vehicle. So that's what started the thing. But the bottom line is, no, they did not have our authorization to move them. No, we're not going to let them leave them where they are. And yes, we're going to work with them to resolve the issues so that hopefully it works best for all involved.
Do you have any kind of timeline on that?
I'm pushing Bill for that, so I'll report at the next meeting if that's okay. I would love to report the next meeting that it's done,
yeah.
But the fact that he's saying he's going to assign his maintenance crew to do that, I don't know the size of their maintenance crew. And like I said, Bill's trying to have a sit-down with him to kind of...
Do you think it's more likely than not that they'll just move them simply back to where they were? Does that seem the most likely scenario? Or
it really, I mean, to me, I don't know what the union issue is.
Uh-huh.
But I do know that if they don't, we're not only going to require that they have a rear access, but we're going to actually require that they build the sidewalk around, mm-hmm. which is going to be a much more lengthy process.
Yeah, so. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, no problem. Just a couple of other updates. I did meet last week. The SRA board meeting gave them a little bit of update of what's going on in the city, and I felt that was fairly well received. I wanted to check with you all on the lighting in here. Michael Jones and I, before the last study session, actually moved the light so that there's more light on the speaker. We want to also know if you need all of these lights on. So I'm actually going to ask Michael if you wouldn't mind pulling the spotlights from the rear and see if that's acceptable, because one of the things you'd like to do is actually not use as many of the lights. Mm-hmm. Does that work for you?
Okay. Do we need these?
Yes.
Why do you need those?
Do we need them?
Yes,
you need them. Unless we actually put a desk lamp on the table for you, we think that you do need them.
Looks good.
Oh, actually,
these?
Michael, what's the deal with
those?
Well, we can. If we turn those on, it's difficult to project on the wall behind you, which is why we don't generally turn them on. But that's another alternative.
Like so if we don't project behind you, we can turn those on and turn these off, but then you would lose the light shining on the speaker unless we do something.
Can you turn these off now, Michael, and let's see if it's... See, I think that's good enough. They're just so blurry.
I agree. That's why I wanted to bring it up while you were all here, because there's been actually a lot of energy put in to making this work for you.
So.
No,
don't ask him anything personal.
Can't read anyway.
So I think we can move the ladder, which is a great thing. Okay. Couple other things. We have several projects out to bid right now. The rebid of the Public Works building. We also have the monitoring well that is on our small works roster. Public Works helped planning with the site prep for the new playground, and so that's out to bid right now. And, of course, the groundskeeping is going back out this week. We've made selections, consultant selections, for our electric and water comp plan, and so we're working with those two different companies on the scope of work. And there's been meetings had and everything else, and I'm hoping that'll come back on. The Whatcom PUD has at least verbally indicated they have some more energy efficiency funds that we would be able to take advantage. This is funding that comes from BPA, from whom we buy our power, and it's based on the amount of power you buy from them, of course, so the amount for Blaine is a small amount, but PUD with major industrial customers gets a sizable amount, and there's only so much they can do for energy efficiency. So they've been very generous with us over the years, and they are repeating that generosity. What this means is, for our ESCO project, we won't have a need to use the large project fund. BPA offers a large project fund for those one-time big projects, and then the jurisdiction needs to pay that back to that fund over the course of the next two rate periods, which for them is 4 years. So for our ESCO project, we were planning on $80,000 from the large project fund. And so the good news is by not needing to use that large project fund, our conservation money is more available to our other ratepayers over the next two rate cycles. So we're very pleased about that. You might be wondering what's going on 3rd Street. Notice that it's closed on that one block. The Loomis building is putting in a fire system. So they needed to do a live tap in the water main. I saw them working on my way here a little before 5, so they're definitely working hard on trying to wrap that up. But they do have an excavation permit from us for that work. Library, there's also work going on in front of the library right now that's being undertaken by the Public Works crew in preparation for the groundskeeping contract. We committed in the groundskeeping contract to remove all the bamboo. And we have been working with the library. Debbie is super duper excited about it. It's going to take a while. So I'll just tell you right now that that stuff is pervasive. It's going to want to come back, and it's going to want to come back. And so we're going to just work with it until we have eradicated it, and then we will replant it. So we're really pleased to have the cooperation of the library as we look at how we can best maintain the grounds in front of that building. And then a couple of AWC things. There's an AWC webinar on the 24th, which is tomorrow, on low impact development. You probably got that for me in your email. This is something that the Education Committee is trying to foster, is more educational opportunities like this. So low-impact development really relates to how stormwater is managed and how it could be managed in a way that doesn't involve big structures. So example would be the rain gardens on Marine Drive that we built when we did those improvements. That's treating the water quality in the same way as a very elaborate storm filter catch basin would do it, but it's doing it the way nature would. So that's just one example of several low-impact development items, and I will sure encourage you to view that between 1 and 2:30 today. And then if I can prevail upon you for 2 minutes, there's a video I was going to show you on how AWC speaks out on transportation. Are you up for 2 minutes, or do you want me to send you the link?
Thank you. Raven will be signing autographs after the viewing.
I thought she was selling CDs.
The transportation network, it's their lifeblood. So big or small. In most cases, cities are the first and last mile of almost every journey, whether it's a product, goods and services, or people. So big and small, we need that. In my city, which is Everett, we build airplanes. And it's the center, the largest manufacturing center in the state of Washington. So transportation is essential both for the goods and services that are necessary to build things, but it's also for the people who build them to get to and from their jobs as opposed to being stuck in traffic. Can't build an airplane when you're sitting in a car.
Well, transportation is a huge priority here in the city of Blaine. We have actually two state highways crossing the border at the same place. So we have impacts from that state highway on our city local streets. One thing that people don't really recognize is that street funding is in direct competition with general funding. There is no other form of enterprise funding for streets. So we are incredibly reliant on grants and other state programs like Transportation Improvement Board, Public Works Trust Fund to accomplish what we need to accomplish on our city streets.
What we really need is a comprehensive transportation package that gives us a solid footing to move forward with the future so that we can design, we can build, we can improve. And giving us a source that we know we can work with and partner with and plan with.
The issue now is to move forward in the next century for the transportation needs that we have to move people and goods and to do that in the appropriate way for every part of the state, every region, and every city.
That's all I got.
Okay. Don't run away. Questions? How are we making out with the port on Marine Drive? Are we still negotiating with them?
Yeah, actually, Michael and I received a draft interlocal agreement from them. And we reviewed it with Dave, I think that was on Friday, and we've set up a meeting for them in the first part of April to discuss it. It's not at a place that we're willing to bring forward yet. Depending on how that is received, we might actually recommend like a joint work session or study session, but our hope is that we'll be able to get it to a point that you can approve it without needing to do that.
Now, the other question I had was dolling up the front of this building. Have we found any funds to plant a few plants?
We've talked about it. I think that one of our hopes was that we would have our groundskeeper in front of you this evening, yeah. Of course. We did include in the groundskeeping scope a number of hours for unanticipated work so that we, if there's something that comes up that needs done, we're not handcuffed by the fact that this is a lump sum contract and we can't add or remove anything. And so this is something that I would like to talk with them and probably have their assistance with planting.
I think it's really important that we set the example for the rest of the city about what we want it to look like. I don't think we're doing that.
Harry?
Yes, go ahead, Dennis.
Raven, is somebody taking care of the plot that is on Bell and
Bruce's place?
Well, I noticed that the flowers are blooming, just absolutely lovely.
I was asked
now
about it, if there was a possibility they needed help,
mm-hmm.
and who to contact.
If anyone is interested, just have them contact me. We do have it in our groundskeeping contract to maintain all of the entrance monuments is what we call them. So it'll include 276 and the two on each as well.
My wife would like to know why the big cement, chunk of cement's right in the middle of it still.
It's coming out when it goes back, yeah.
Are those getting finished now?
They're in our shop, and our attempts to pull out the rotten posts have failed, so it's been a little bit more involved than we thought. We even used the line truck.
Along with talking about landscaping around the building, on the corner here, we had talked about putting flagpole,
mm-hmm.
or at least two flagpoles, I guess, Washington State and the U.S. flag. Where are we on that? We had talked about bringing the one over from, I remember talking to Michael about this, about a year ago, from the old City Hall and bringing those over. So can we do something even in interim or get this funded somehow? I think it's important.
I don't disagree. I think there was a number of unfunded priorities left over from the original move, and maybe we just need to bring those back to council to prioritize. I don't know, Jeff, if we have any general fund pot of money for that kind of stuff, or if you want to wait till mid-year and bring it forward.
In addition, at least price what it might cost.
Okay.
Get a cost for it, and then
sure.
Why don't we try to
get that to you before the next meeting so we can make a recommendation for the flagpole.
Okay, thank you, Raven. Mm-hmm. Chief, do we have anything from public safety?
Updates on a couple of things, just to let you know that we have two lateral applicants for the police officer position that are being interviewed this week, and hopefully one of those works out. Otherwise, I'll be coming back to you with a request that we do an entry level hire for that position, because we've pretty much used all of our options in that regard. We do have one reserve applicant who has been with us for several months in recruit status, and there's just one reserve academy a year, which is put on in our region. It's actually hosted by Skagit Valley Community College. That starts in June, and that recruit is signed up for that academy. It's a six-month process. It's a very It's quite an investment on the individual's time, as well as the offices, but we'll keep you posted on that one. I want to let you know about an issue we're seeing in terms of collisions. I don't know if you noticed in the last couple of weeks of our press reports, but we've had an unusual number of car crashes in the, say, from January through today, the 11-week period. Normally, over the past several years, in that particular period, the first few months of the year, we'd average about maybe 12 or so, 12 to 14 accidents, of which four or five of them would be reportable. And a reportable collision is defined as one that either involves an injury or at least $1,000 damage to one vehicle or property, one particular item. And so far this year, we've had 23 total collisions in that 11-week period. That's over two a week. And of those, a dozen of them, 12 of them, have been reportable. And several of those reportables have involved injuries. So I can't report to you why that is happening. I can tell you that it is an anomaly. If you look at the prior 5 years prior to this year, again, we had on average about 15 and less than five of them reportable. So we're analyzing them one by one now to see if there are commonalities. You would almost think that the weather has been so much better this past season, this current season, as opposed to years past, and you'd think that bad accidents would happen in bad weather. But we're analyzing to try to provide you information on why that is, but just let you know that it is a statistic that we're keeping in mind.
Mike, are these local Blaine residents that are involved in these collisions, or are these out of Blaine?
That'll be one of the statistics I provide to you, not just over this last several weeks, but over the previous period as well. And our vehicle miles break out to somewhere between 50 and 70% of vehicle miles and contacts involve out of city or out of county residents. But just anecdotally, several of the collisions that I've been on in the last several weeks have involved local residents.
Michael, is there an accounting made of whether texting or that type of thing is involved?
Yes, and especially that is one of the factors that is watched for in collisions. It's one of the indices. There are a handful of statistics we have to draw out of every collision, and distracted driving is one of them. And in at least a couple of the most recent instances, distracted driving was one of the components. One of the distracted drivers was very intoxicated, which doesn't count.
Is DUI a factor, too, that you consider?
Yeah, we've also had an uptick in the number of DUI arrests over the last month.
So were they a factor in these accidents?
In a couple of them, yes.
But not really that.
Taking you off the road. Yeah. Particular area of the city that's more prominent than other?
That's one of the problems. There for a while, we were thinking that it was mostly on the truck route, for instance, at H and the truck route and Boblett and the truck route, but we've had them at 6th and H, we've had them at Boblett and H, we've had them on U Street, we've had them on Semiamu Parkway, we've had them on Peace Portal Drive. It's going to take a little bit of work to dig down and see if we have enough data compiled to provide you some probabilities, and it's not just for your information; it's also for our officers. It's to help them target where they can best spend their time and what types of driving they can best be interdicting. So, it is just something that is causing us concern. I just want to make you folks aware of that.
Well,
alcohol.
Chief, have we ever done a traffic count at the bottom of the exit into Blaine off the border, which would give us a count of cars coming?
If you're looking for the ones coming down that ramp at 276,
yeah.
it would be a Ravens, right? It would be a Washington State Patrol statistic, and I'm certain that we can find out what the last count was and try to give you some additional information on that.
That could be really helpful because, I mean, that would tell us how many people from the north are coming in at any particular time. So.
The hotel's gotten a lot more busier. Is that traffic in the spit?
Anecdotally, I am one of the...
It's kind of a speed area through there.
One of the most frequent complaints that I get are in regards to traffic, is in regards to speeders, and in regards to speeders on Sunny Island Parkway and Drayton Harbor roads. We are in periodic contact with the staff at the hotel. Management is very good about putting the word out to us. So are the motorists who do get a citation, be they from the marina or the hotel. They're really good about spreading the word of how expensive that was. But nonetheless, you have to spend some amount of time being present in the enforcement.
So. I think it's that going down the hill that sort of gets people, speeding up. I don't know, maybe there's different signage or something.
We're just looking at last week at the best place to put our radar trailer out on the spit. We're trying to find a spot right at the bottom of that hill, right near the curve. And the problem we're running into is we don't want to distract people from seeing the pedestrians because they're focused on what that sign is doing. So we're trying to find the balance, the right place to put that. But that's one of the things we're looking at.
You just go down there and you just notice people just don't observe the 25-mile-an-hour speed limit.
Yeah. I'm sorry, sir. Yeah, it's not just an enforcement issue. Certainly, there are engineering and infrastructure components to it that can be of help as well. But and also to let you know, along the lines of statistics of the use of data to drive, we call it intelligent policing. We are updating some of our internal skill sets in our office, getting more updated training in how best to analyze the available information. And also using it to help develop our plan to replace our current records management system, which is 14 years old and past end of life, frankly. So I'll be reporting more on that in the future, but to let you know that is one of the things that we're working on is to how best to provide you folks with the information you need to make those decisions. So.
I was thinking the other day, and I noticed it, I don't remember where it was now, but that sign that says, the laws are strictly enforced. Maybe that needs to go on the semi-emo that says, we're going to enforce the speed limits on this section.
I'd be more than happy to work with Raven on that.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree, sir. Okay. Any other questions, folks?
Okay, thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Michael, do you have any for the city manager? Oh, no, excuse me, Michael.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. God, where are you, Michael?
I'm going to defer my report to Michael. We've had enough time together tonight, I think.
Okay.
I'll try to keep it brief. I do have one thing, which is an update on the Conley property. You'd asked about that at one of the prior meetings, and I just wanted to let you know. We have not entered into a deferred prosecution agreement. There's been a lot of back and forth between the two different attorneys, so there hasn't been a signed agreement yet. But the things that were included in that agreement were these: termination of truck parking. That has happened. There's no more truck parking. Restricting site access, so there's not traffic in and out of the property. That is done. Site stabilization. The property was supposed to be stabilized by March 31st. That's not done, but they've made substantial progress. The city needs to be requested to come out and do an inspection. Completion of wetland mitigation. They've submitted a report to the city indicating their completion, and that needs to be reviewed by us. Completion of stormwater pond and related stormwater system improvements. That's not done. It was supposed to be, according to the unsigned agreement, completed March 31st. They need to submit a request to the city for an inspection on that. Then access to the city facilities, in other words, catch basins and manholes, those kinds of things, needs to be provided appropriately. That's not done, and there's also been quite a bit of progress in that regard. That was also to be completed by March 31st. Again, we need to come out and inspect that. They need to request that we do that. Hughes Avenue repair has been completed with an agreement and payment. So they didn't do the physical repairs, but they've contributed to Hughes Avenue improvements. with the city project there and paid the $10,000 estimated cost of their contribution. Site use and activity prohibition, in other words, not using the site. Well, that's ongoing. So they're still not using the site, and we're still not going to issue them a permit if they came in to ask for one. Performance bond security, this is really subject to completion of the other things, and judging by the progress that's been made so far, it's unlikely a bond would even be required, because there was supposed to be a bond that would be exercised if they didn't complete things, but we're very close to complete. And then finally, the things on the, sorry, can't even read my own notes. Entering to the deferred prosecution agreement as a remedy is well ongoing, but after consulting with John and Alex, who's really been tracking this project, we assume we will never see a deferred prosecution agreement because all of the things that were in it are going to be done by the timelines that were specified. They've just dragged their feet on completing the agreement. So I think the end result is good. We're where we wanted to be. March 31st will be here quickly. Hopefully these things will be resolved by then. We'll have a report for you at the beginning of April, but it looks like we're well on our way to having the property brought into compliance and cleaned up.
Is there anything with the Department of Ecology that the city, even though you say it's done, they come back and say no?
Yes. Well, the Department of Ecology can make their own assessment of their own laws, but not ours. Like a stormwater violation where they're saying where they may have a an open case that the Conley property site is polluting the stormwater, the Department of Ecology can exercise that and continue to exercise that, but they don't have authority to come in and tell us we didn't meet our own laws.
But can you request that they come and inspect?
We can request anything we want. They don't have to do what we say, but we could request that.
Any other questions? Okay. Calendars, any changes or modifications, Sherry?
Not at this point. I think that probably we'll come up with something for the next council meeting.
Okay. Our next item is unfinished business. Only thing I would like to raise is how do we deal with this request from the library? I mean, is that something that wish to pursue, or is this something that will be dealt with in a budget process next year, or how do we sort of?
Well, you know, I think what's happening, you're seeing citizens engaging in, you know, community improvements. They want things to happen. So this isn't the only group, right? You've got a group in the Parks and Cemetery Board that are working toward purchasing open space along East Portal that have expanded their thoughts to other areas, including, I think, the library has been part of their conversation. Yeah, so you're getting a lot of interest now in doing things for the community. And there's a couple of ways to deal with it. One is to let it kind of happen in an organic fashion, which is kind of grounds up. People get, you know, generating an interest and generating energy around it and seeing where it goes, kind of unguided, other than what the Parks and Cemetery Commission or boards are doing. The other is to make it more of a work plan, recognize it as something that's occurring, and then you know, put some more structure around that. So when you do that, of course, others that have maybe more latent, that aren't quite going yet, might get excited, and I think that's what happened to the library. Interest that Friends of the Library realized, oh my gosh, the city is looking at purchasing, acquiring lands or space or things, and so they got themselves kind of organized. The concern about that, of course, is it starts to snowball into something that's larger than you can manage or we could do. My recommendation is to do it in a managed fashion, though. Organic is fantastic in the sense of the grassroots, but it can go in a very odd places and become very conflicting if different groups are competing with one another. So if the city wants to, or the council wants to be more affirmative with it, then I would suggest we ask the Parks and Cemetery Board, which is the natural kind of place for it to go from a community perspective, to include it in their work plan, talk about it, and see how it fits into the other elements, the other open space acquisition conversation. And it could be that they both emerge as priorities. They're both going to be in the same ticket, so to speak. It's going to be then a question for the council to sort out or accept some recommendation from the Parks and Cemetery Board about that. This all it all comes to a conclusion in a vote. The city doesn't have the financial capacity to do really anything without a bond issue. So that it ends there. So then you look at the calendar, and just like you're doing with the jail, it's exactly the same process now. As you look at the calendar, determine which election you want to go to, you back that up and determine what you have to do to get there, and then that then becomes the conversation about size and scope and financials, and all that starts to pick up energy and speed. And if that's what the council feels the community would support. So I think, you know, the early work now is to, you know, be more formal in the Parks and Cemetery Board so they understand this is something we want them to study, and they feel empowered to do that. But they're probably wondering, is this within our framework now even? So if you want us to do that, I think that would be the way I'd suggest it. Do you have another idea?
Well, I would just reiterate that the Friends of the Library is one of the groups that is presenting to the Open Space Committee, so they will be considered in that framework. The Parks and Cemetery Board would need direction or even council to designate authority for them to sort of take shepherd in the role of the library, because that's not in their purview, according to our code.
So kind of on the same thought, I think our city has done this. I haven't refreshed it since I've been here. But oftentimes they'll do a capital facilities analysis. So they'll look at all the facilities, the old senior, you know, the community center facility, parks, which are being looked at now a little bit, the open space library. You know, this building's already been taken care of, but the police station, certainly a capital facility. You look at all of that infrastructure and start asking questions about its age, its facility, its capacities, repairs and operations costs. You start, that's another larger kind of approach. Then from that, you get a list of things that you would want to pay attention to, sort that out into a more reasonable process so that, again, it's somewhat something the community should be engaged in. It's not the work plan the council would do, other than just guiding it with your own interest, and as well as your, as people bring information to you through this formal process, you'd guide it. But at the end of the day, you get a list of capital projects. That capital project list would be prioritized, probably by the Parks and Cemetery Committee. For the most part, you might have, the public safety would have its own kind of channel that would be working. Ultimately, it comes back to the council with the prioritization. The council looks at it and then sorts out, you know, with the public process, what's the most important? Is the library most important? Is the community center most important? Are they all important? Just the school district just did this with the school bond. It's the same process, and at the end of the day, you put something on the ballot, if that's what you want to do, and the voters then take charge of the campaign to get it approved.
I would say that is the approach to take as far as the capital facilities, to look at it as a whole, because, you know, I long thought that the senior center should be brought downtown, let the Boys and Girls Club take over that whole facility, and then do something close to where the library is now, the library, the senior center, and just kind of a general community center, which would encompass, we could put the visitor center there, it could just be there could be some commercial uses, and look at it in total, and maybe look at it as a phased approach. What would come first? What makes the most sense? Mm-hmm. You know, we'd have to tear down the city hall to make room for this. Do we want to buy the rest of the block? You know, all that kind of stuff, but to kind of prioritize and decide what's the most logical step to get to where we want to go. The open space thing, I think, is sort of a separate thing. I think that I look upon that as a separate kind of bond or issue, because the emphasis seems to be on the west side of Peace Portal, you know, property there. And that's kind of separate from these other needs we have, you know, which are only just going to get greater as time goes on. So anyway, I think that's what we need to do. We need to do some kind of study or research on what's the most logical approach to this, and, you know, what's step one, what's step two, what's step three, and what kind of money do we need to ask the people for.
So if there's an agreement with that, my first thing that would be to talk to Jeff and have the Finance Committee frame that up in a budget, because it has to be done professionally. You need to have support to work that through. So that would be something that could happen this spring as part of the Finance Committee's work, then come back with a recommendation to the council with, you know, that scope of service and potential budget. They could interview, you know, people that do that kind of work.
Mm-hmm. David, there's no library district. There's no library district.
Sure, yes, there is. Yeah, we're part of the Washington County library system.
So if we were going to talk about raising money for a library, would people in the northern part of the county be included in that?
So the library probably has a demographic of their service area. We should talk to them about that. You know, Ferndale has a library. Linden has their own library, but Ferndale's library is brand new, and it's been built by Ferndale as part of the Friends of the Ferndale Library, but it's part of the library system. So those are all questions that we should talk to the library district about. What's their involvement, and we already have history on that.
They talk about 20,000 people being members of the library, but we're a town of 4,800 people, so the rest of the people have to come from the county.
But the library itself is owned by the city.
The building is owned by the city. But your point's well taken.
I guess the question I would have is, we're going to build a building to house, say, 30,000 members. We're building a building for the county.
Mm-hmm. So you'd have to look at part of the work that would, how would you wrap, what would be the envelope and the sideboards for that? And the first thing that occurs to me, separate from the library district, is you have a parks district, which is maybe the same geography, which includes Birch Bay and, you know, some other places. So I would, but that's the challenge of having to sort this out. The council doesn't need to do that. You just need to give direction that basically says, this is a regional facility that serves a geographic area. We provide the building, but we think it should be shared by a multiple. We would then look at how to sort that out for you.
Because the library really should be in Birch Bay. That's where the people are.
It could be. I think it's a great economic engine, by the way. Yeah. People come to the library, oh, sure, then go get a cup of coffee.
But if you looked at just where the demographics are, the people are in Birch Bay, not here.
Yeah. We want to keep it here.
I know.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Just make it sure that's clear.
I know.
Yeah. It's too good of a tool.
Yes. There was a question somewhere?
Yeah. But even the facilities like the senior center, that's not just used by the citizens of Hawaii. Yeah. Same way with the Boys and Girls Club, because they're from the school district.
They say 70% of the Boys and Girls Club are non-residents of the city.
That's right.
But they use it after school, which the school is right there. Mm-hmm. So that's why it makes sense to have it here.
Of course. Because we're providing the facility for the, because the library and the city.
Yeah, there might be different ways to structure this,
but I think that's really appropriate discussion. I think, in terms of, I can't imagine how long we will be able to maintain the jail. I mean, the police department. That building's old. Mm-hmm. That's really old. The library's old. We need to really be thinking about how we're going to replace those, and over what period of time. Bonnie's correct. Maybe we should raise all the money for one big facility.
Could be. Well, this is a great time to start talking about it. So we'll ask the Finance Committee to start putting their minds around what the budget might look like for that, and then break it into parts and pieces as we need to, and come back with a recommendation to the full council.
Okay.
Comments, questions? Okay, great.
Any new business? Okay, if not, we're going to now break for executive session.
Okay.
At 8:17, not 7 p.m. as the agenda says, to discuss collective bargaining pursuant to RCW 42.30.140(4).
For how long?
How long do we anticipate being out, Mr. City Manager? How long? And
15 minutes.
Any? Do we plan any action? No action being planned. You're welcome to stay.
Appreciate it.